another year on this earth this past week. I guess that's a good thing for me, anyway. You know, but what, I think maybe it's a sign of age. We went to town Siloam on my birthday, and I seen a new car wash. And my thought was, we gotta go to the new car wash. And we waited in line for 25 minutes for this new car wash. And when I get there, there's a car wash for $10, and there's a car wash for $20. And immediately, I know that $10 car wash is a lot shoddier than the $20 car wash for an apparatus to pull my machine or my car to squirt water and soap on it for 25 seconds to a minute, and then I'm out of there. It's genius. The car wash people are genius for people like me. My other story involves the bulletin. If you'll notice, your bulletin has the same cover story as last week's bulletin. I'm trying to get a point across. It's not a mistake. That's not true. It is a mistake. I was telling somebody, I use a website called bulletingold.com a lot of times, and I'm so happy when I find an article that's short enough that will fit on the front of the bulletin. And I was so happy Friday or Saturday when I found that article. And I'm sure I was so happy last Friday or Saturday when I found that article the first time. I blame the heart surgery. I've got some memory issues going on. It's good to see everyone here this morning. We are going to start a new series of sermons. We're going to base it on 2 Samuel, and I think that would have been a really great idea last year for LTC. maybe not a great idea. Probably after we're done, you can talk to one of these younger ones, and they will tell you what I got right and what I got wrong. Like I said, this seemed like a good idea. Then I started thinking about all of them studying 2 Samuel last year, and they probably know more than I do. But I am excited because this is a story, 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings are a series of stories of books that tell us the story of Israel's fall and why Israel fell, why God's people eventually ended up in captivity in Babylon. And so this story not only chronicles some of the successes, things that they do well, but it also chronicles their sin and the things that they did poorly. It highlights some of the good kings, but it has especially it highlights those kings that were doing wrong, including the best, one after God's own heart, David. And it chronicles who he was and then the good things that he did, but also his sins. How David was a deeply flawed individual, just like all people are. And really this story teaches us that in spite of his flaws, David was still faithful to God, and that Israel, in spite of their flaws, could still be faithful to God. And it reminds us that in spite of our flaws, we can be faithful to God. That God chose to make a covenant with and to partner with a person like David and say, I'm going to choose you to work with and to be a father to you like you are my son. And really he does the same with all of Israel. And that's an amazing thing that a flawless God would choose a flawed people and say, I'm going to partner with you. What I want from you isn't necessarily perfection, but faith, faithfulness. And here's the thing. We can be faithful in spite of our flaws. Sometimes I think we think that faithfulness is perfection. That faithfulness is flawlessness. And we think faithfulness is flawlessness, that in order to be faithful to God and in order for God to love us, then we have to be perfect. And I'm afraid what ends up happening is that a lot of us end up feeling like failures. Have you ever felt like that? Discouraged because you think, well, I've really blown that. And you look at other people and you think they've got it all figured out. Those things don't happen to them. They don't make the mistakes that I make. I've messed up too bad. I'm too flawed, and there's no way that God can use me. Well, I think one thing about 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings, one thing that it teaches us is that God can use and will use flawed people. In fact, it's the only kind of people God can use because that's the only kind of people that exist. David, a man after God's own heart, a man who God was going to partner with, and with his offspring, he was a flawed individual. And all of the tribes of Israel were a flawed people, and yet, in spite of their flaws, God said, I want to make a covenant with you. And if they were faithful, he could and would work together with them. Not if they were flawless or perfect, because they never were. But at times they were faithful. And in this age, currently, you and I are never going to be perfect. We are going to have flaws. But we can, right now, in this age, be faithful. I don't want any of us to be discouraged by the flaws that we have, by the mistakes that we have made, by the sins we've committed, and we think, well, I can't be faithful to God, because you can be faithful to God in spite of the flaws you have. And I think that this story teaches us and helps us understand that. When we think of Israel, we tend to think of Israel as a whole group of people. But in reality, not only were they individuals, but they were a tribal people. They were made up of 12 different tribes, and sometimes during their history, they were together. They worked together. They certainly had a shared history together, and they'd been through a lot together, but they were 12 very distinct tribes, and a lot of times, they warred with each other. There was tension, and there was war among the tribes. And now Saul came along, and he ruled over the 12 tribes, and you remember that Saul was made king, but when Saul was killed in battle, as Paul was saying, there really became two kings. The tribe of Judah had anointed David to be their king because he was their guy. And then Saul's son Ishbosheth, that's a name that didn't catch on in Western baby names, did it like David did. We don't have a lot of Ishbosheths running around. But his tribe, Benjamin, and then the other 10 tribes, so you got 11 tribes versus one, they anointed Ishbosheth to be their king. So the tribes had different kings, and for 7.5 years, they fought with each other. For 7.5 years, they killed each other. They were incredibly brutal with each other. And as I read through this and I think about this, I can't really imagine how God would feel at that time. I mean, here are the people that he brought out of Egypt. Here are the people that he gave the promised land. There was a bad period of time with the judges where they were all fighting, and then finally they sort of come together under Saul, but there's a lot of problems that go along with that as well. And now we have two kings, and the tribes are at war with each other. They're hating each other and killing each other. And every time blood is shed, every time somebody else gets killed, every time somebody does something to reignite the tensions, can't you just imagine how those tensions and bitterness and resentment would grow? I bet if you wouldn't have to think very hard to imagine that. There were a lot of problems that went along with that. And again, now they've got two kings. But do you know, think about how they felt. Do you know what your tribe did to my tribe? Don't you know what your people have done to my people? Don't you know that you aren't really a part of us? Don't you know that you guys have done all of these bad things to us? Can't you just imagine how God felt during this time with all that tension and war? And then finally, the commander of Ishbosheth's army. So again, we've got 11 tribes against one, against David. And the 11 tribes commander, Abner. Abner decides that he's had enough of this. And he goes to the different elders of the tribes of Israel. And at 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 17, it says that Abner conferred with the elders of Israel, saying, "For some time past, you have been seeking David as king over you. Now then, bring it about, for the Lord has promised David, saying, 'By the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel, and from the hand of the Philistines, and from the hand of all their enemies.' Abner also spoke to Benjamin. And then Abner went to tell David at Hebron all that Israel and the whole house of Benjamin thought good to do." So Abner says, "Listen, I know that God has chosen David to be the king." And so he meets with all the leaders, including the most loyal tribe to Ishbosheth, including the most loyal tribe to Saul. he goes to Benjamin as well, bringing everybody together. And just as you get excited that this thing's going to happen and they're going to be united, and you think about all of this is coming together, Joab shows up, the commander of David's forces, just like Abner's his opposite. So Joab, he hates Abner's guts. Abner has killed his brother, and he distrusts him, and he hates him, and he wants him dead, and so he murders him. And just as we are on the brink of unity, they're going to bring all the tribes together under David, and then Joab murders this guy that was trying to bring everyone together. I think David's reaction in chapter 3 and in verse 35, David mourns for Abner. Again, Abner is the commander of his enemy, and David mourns for him, even though he is on the other side of him. He is one of them. David fasted and David mourns for him. It says the people came to him to persuade David to eat bread while it was still yet day. But David swore, saying, God do so to me and more also if I taste bread or anything else until the sun goes down. And all the people took notice of it, and it pleased them. And everything that the king did pleased all the people. So all the people and all Israel understood that day, and it had not been the king's will to put to death Abner, the son of Ner. They say, look, he's having compassion on us. He didn't put Abner to death, and that was something that Joab did on his own. But just as soon as this tragedy, that this event passes, you've got two guys that go and they assassinate Ishbosheth. They think, we got to deal with this guy. And so they sneak in and they kill him. And then they go to David with the news that they just murdered his enemy. We've murdered the king of your enemies. Aren't you proud of us? Well, of course, David's not. He doesn't appreciate this at all. And not only does he deal with the assassins, but he mourns the death of Ishbosheth. He mourns the death of his enemy. And as I'm reading through this and through the history of Israel, you have to ask yourself, who are the good guys? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Are the good guys David and his people? Well, then you got Joab, who's David's right-hand man. Are they the good guys? And the other guys bad? Are Saul's descendants and the other 11 tribes the bad guys? The truth is that they all had done wrong. Everybody had messed up. Everybody had blood on their hands. Everybody had killed and destroyed and hurt and sinned and injured. Everybody in this story, probably in this room, is flawed. And we haven't even begun to highlight David's flaws yet, but we know. We know that even David is a flawed individual, and people on both sides have enough reasons to resent and to hate everybody else on the other side and think, you are not really one of my people. You're from Judah, or you're from Benjamin, or you're from fill in the blank. You're from one of those other tribes. You're one of those other people, and don't you know what your people have done to my people? Don't you know the crimes they've committed? Don't you know the violence that they have done to my people? Don't you know our history? People on both sides of the aisle could have said that to one another, but because of David's kindness and his love for his enemies, he unites the people of Israel. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 1. Then all the tribes of Israel came to David at Hebron. That includes the tribe of Benjamin, Saul's tribe, Ishbosheth's tribe, that Abner who was just murdered, that he was the commander of all of these troops, and all of these people, they come to David and said, behold, we are bone and you're bone and flesh. In times past when Saul was king over us, it was you who led out and brought in Israel. And you'll remember that years before Saul started hating David, before he drove him out and before he tried to kill David, again, flaws and crimes and violence on both sides, Saul hated David and he drove him out. But before that, David was the commander of Saul's armies. And he led out and brought in Israel. And they said, the Lord said to you, you shall be the shepherd of my people Israel. and you shall be prince over Israel. So all the elders of Israel came to the king at Hebron, and King David made a covenant with them at Hebron and before the Lord, and they anointed David king over Israel. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. At Hebron he reigned over Judah for 7 and 6 months, and at Jerusalem he reigned over all of Israel and Judah for 33 years. And here's what David was doing. He was uniting flawed people. He was flawed, and Judah, his tribe, was flawed, and all the other tribes, all flawed people. But they came together in unity with other flawed people, which means they had to look past or overlook things that happened in the past. They had to put their bitterness aside. They had to put their resentment aside. They had to put their anger aside and say, this is God's will for us to come together as one people. And we, hopefully, as we read the stories about David and we read through 1 and 2 Samuel, we realize that the descendant of David is Jesus. And that Jesus is not only not the flawed king, but Jesus is the flawless king. And like David, Jesus loves his enemies. And like David, he is uniting not just the tribes of Israel, but he is uniting all the tribes of the entire world. And nothing is more important to Jesus than unity. There is nothing more important to Jesus than bringing people together in unity. We think about the things that Jesus said in his ministry. He said, listen, if you're offering your gift at the altar, I mean, think about that. What could be more important than that? What could be more important than worshiping God? What could be more important than leading your gift to God at the altar? And Jesus says, I'll tell you what's more important than that. Reconciliation. So if you are offering your gift at the altar and there you remember your brother has something against you, finish leaving your offering. Is that what he says? No. He just says, doesn't finish leaving it, but leave. Leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Nothing is more important to Jesus than bringing people together. David was a flawed king in many ways, but he united flawed people. People that put aside and put past their resentment and their anger and their bitterness. But Jesus is the flawless king, and he's bringing together flawed people. It would be easy to bring together flawless people. Unity among flawless people would be simple, but that just can't happen. It would be easy if we all agreed with each other on every single topic and we never had a disagreement. It would be easy if we didn't have a past where my people may have hurt your people at some point. It would be easy if I never made mistakes, or if you never made mistakes, or it'd be easy if I'd never hurt you, or you had never hurt me. It would be easy if we had never hurt each other's feelings or did something that harmed each other. It would be easy to unite flawless people. But what's challenging is uniting flawed people. Because of all the reasons that we've already said, unifying people that have said hurtful things, unifying people that have done things that are hurtful, unifying people that have a history, people from different tribes, people with different backgrounds, people with baggage, people that don't understand or care about the things that you understand or care about. But that kind of unity, unifying flawed people, is the only kind of unity that exists. There can only be a unity of flawed people because there are no flawless people. There are only flawed people. There are only people who have made mistakes. There are only people who have sinned. There are only people who have hurt other people. There are only people who have misunderstandings. There are only people who are broken. So if there is ever going to be a unity, it's going to be a unity of flawed people. And here's what I want us to take away from this whole story and putting it together with Jesus is this. If a flawed people from flawed tribes can unite over a flawed king, then surely we can unite around a flawless king, Jesus. if a flawed people can be at war with each other for 7.5 years, and even before that, throughout history, they've had tension. People that not just their ancestors or relatives had done horrible things to each other, but they had. Individuals, they had done and said some terrible things, committed crimes and atrocities against each other, flawed people from flawed tribes and flawed cultures and histories clashing with each other in the tribes of Israel. And if these flawed individuals, if these flawed tribes could unite around a flawed king like David, as good as he was, and again, we haven't even begun to start, and don't worry, we're not going to start today highlighting David's sins, but he was a flawed individual. But if those flawed people and those flawed tribes could unite around a flawed king, again, surely people like us from flawed backgrounds and flawed groups of people can unite around Jesus. Yes, absolutely. People you know are messed up. And they know you. I mean, guess what you are? You are messed up at times as well. A unity that exists until somebody messes up, that's not unity. A unity that exists only until you disagree, that's not unity at all. The only kind of unity that can exist is a unity of flawed people, not because we're uniting around each other's perfection, but because we're uniting around Jesus. It's Jesus who brings us together in spite of our backgrounds, in spite of the mistakes that we've made or the people that we've hurt. Jesus is bringing us together, so the goal, in spite of our flaws, in spite of the flaws of other people, is to move to greater unity. And this year we've been talking about taking the next step by faith. And when I read this story about the people from the tribe of Benjamin and the tribe of Judah coming together and being part of the same nation and family around King David, that reminds me that you and I, in spite of our differences, in spite of our backgrounds, in spite of our flaws, have to unite around King Jesus. Then it makes me ask, what is my next step towards greater unity? Is there someone in your life that you need to forgive? It can be hard. They've messed up. They've said something. They've posted something. They did something. Somebody has done something to hurt you or someone else. Jesus is all about not just forgiving them their sin and you your sin, but bringing you and them together in the same family. That's what Jesus wants to accomplish in you, is unity. So maybe your next step is a phone call or a text message. Maybe your next step is a hug or, I guess, a virtual hug. Maybe your next step is having a conversation with somebody that you've not been having a conversation with for a long time. Maybe your next step is having a conversation with someone you've never had a conversation with. Just saying that I want to get to know you better. I want to listen to you. I want to hear your story, where you come from and what makes you tick. But maybe your next step is telling somebody I forgive you and I want to put the past behind us. If tribes that have been warring with each other for 7.5 years can come together in unity around King David, then you and whoever you've been at war with can come together around King Jesus. In spite of the differences of opinion, in spite of your background, in spite of your histories, in spite of each other's flaws, Jesus wants to not only forgive us, but to unify us. But in order for that unity to happen, to take place, we have to take a step toward each other. We have to take a step toward that other person. We have to decide that no matter what, I'm going to hang on to you. Because I know from the get-go that you're a messed up person. And you know from the get-go that I'm a messed up person as well. We are going in that unity, and that means that we stick together. In spite of our backgrounds and histories, our current flaws and our current weaknesses, we are in this together. Jesus is bringing us together and is unifying, not because we agree again on everything. And we don't have to agree on everything, but that's another sermon. We are unified not because we are perfect. We are unified because Jesus is perfect. We are unified because of His love. We are unified because of His perfection, His kingship. We should be throwing down our banners and lifting up the banner of Christ. This week, there's something you can do, something I can do to take a step towards someone else to say, I need to forgive you, or I want to get to know you and put the past behind us. I want us to be a closer family the way that Jesus intended it to be. Struggle with that sometimes. Maybe there's someone here this morning and you haven't been baptized into Jesus. We think a lot about the forgiveness that comes with baptism, and that's true. There is forgiveness and mercy that comes with baptism when you're baptized into Jesus, but there's also forgiveness of sins. But there's also unity that happens. In just a few moments, we're gonna break bread and drink the cup. We are communing, not only with each other in this room, but we are communing with our brothers and sisters all over the world. When you are baptized into Christ, you are not only reconciled with God, but with people all over this world. People that look very different than us. People that talk very different than us. People that have different nationalities and backgrounds. Jesus is bringing and intends to bring all people from all tribes of all nations and all languages and all races together into one single family. That's what we are participating in and stepping into when we are baptized into Jesus. So maybe there is someone here this morning and is ready to be unified with the body of Christ, with God himself. Or maybe we have someone here that needs to take a step back towards God and back towards his family. If we can help you in any way, please come as together we stand and we sing.